Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, we reminisce with a bit of a tear in the eye about Cyril Rioli. We look at the talent coming from the Under-18s Championships and what's in store for the Dockers and the Eagles this weekend.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is!
The stadium holds its breath!
It's Duff and Quarters!
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello everybody. Thursday morning. That means it's time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. It's brought to you by Tab Touch. Glenn Quatermain, he's the morning sports editor of the Sunday Times this morning because of the news yesterday about his beloved Cyril Rioli. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian. I remember Cyril kicking the goal that broke Fremantle's heart in the 2015 preliminary final.
Yes.
So I'm sad to see him go, but not as sad as you, Glenn.
This song cuts me up every time, and it will even more now. I reckon John Lennon, the first line of that song, "I heard the news today, oh boy." I reckon he wrote that about Cyril, knowing what was going on.
No, he didn't. Let's not get melodramatic. Okay, cue turning the music off. Let's talk about it. He was one of the great players to watch, wasn't he? As all his family members have been, I think. They are brilliant, instinctive players.
Brilliant family. Long may it continue. All the tributes handed out this week, in the last few days, I should say, and they all centre around the same thing. Not the greatest player of all time, but one of the greatest players of all time with the minimal amount of possessions. So
yeah.
It could have an impact in such a short period of time. You look at his highlights reel. You know, I've got a few highlights. There's a couple of special ones. But it was the marks and the goals, but it was just as much about the little tap-ons and the tackles and the smothers and the helping out. You know, he was a really complete player who didn't play four quarters, but the minimal impact he had, the minimal time he had a massive impact on games.
He did, and he made defenders very nervous when he was around. My favourite goal, Quarters, is the one against Essendon.
Yes.
The give and go.
Oh, it was a beauty.
He was like a card counter because the space was behind him then. And he worked out that that's where it was, not based on seeing it because he was facing the other way, but on seeing and sensing what was in front of him and knowing, oh, well, that must be behind me. Like a bloke counting cards at a casino.
I just don't know if it was that much science in it. He just had this instinctive, innate ability to just have this awareness of whatever was around him. And when he ran into trouble, he could just spin and weave his way out of it without even thinking about it. And that's what we'll miss. There are other players like him in the competition, but not quite like him. You mentioned that give and get with Essendon. You know, there's a real common denominator of those early highlights. It was Chance Bateman often giving to
another Indigenous player.
Yeah, to his little mate up in the forward line. So that one, and there's a really special goal against Richmond too, really deep in a pocket.
Run along the ground.
Of them, he was just in heavy traffic. I think, you know, this perhaps the most symbolic moment was that of his Norm Smith game against, which will hurt Eagle supporters, but the chase down of Hutchings, I think, probably symbolised that game in the second quarter when he chased him down.
I still think Hutchings might have handballed that.
Oh, he did. Yeah, it wasn't a free kick. It was still a pretty special chase, but it wasn't a free kick.
No, fantastic player. Simon Lloyd once told me when he was at Fremantle, and Simon had been at Collingwood before that, and he said they actually did slow motion replays of all their stoppages, and they worked out that Scott Pendlebury's head was turning to where the ball was going to go a few frames before anyone else reacted, and that basically happened at every stoppage, and they realised that he read the hit just quicker than anyone else, and that happened consistently, and that's what made him such a great player. Cyril, probably the same, read the game faster, and as you say, probably instinctively rather than a conscious thought process. There was one highlight I saw last night where he tackled a guy, earned the holding the ball free kick, didn't hang around to take the free kick, ran forward because he realised the ball had spilt to a teammate, the teammate would take advantage, and for him to maximise the advantage, he had to get into an offensive position. I mean, how quickly do you have to add him up to think like that?
Yeah, his reactive skills were as good as you'll see, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, long mate, no doubt there's a whole line of Rioli's we're going to see over the years, and, you know, you just salivate over that. They're just great footballers to watch.
And on our website this week, we do obviously we do a waffle retrospective, and the retrospective this week, because it's NAIDOC week, is the great Indigenous players that have played in the WAFL, and there's a great compilation in there if you want to get onto our website, people, and have a look at it of players like Graham Farmer, Barry Cable, Billy Dempsey, Nicky Winmar, Stephen Michael, Maurice Rioli, and a few others. The Crackers were in there as well. Benny Vigona. I would love to see an hour-long highlights package of Cyril V. Morris.
Oh, yeah. I saw a bit of Morris.
That would be...
It was a pleasure to watch Morris. I saw him he was in his 82 grand final, Norm Smith year, losing grand final. Terrific game. A beautiful player. Again, just had that space and awareness and reactive ability. You just couldn't catch him.
Yep.
You could not catch him. Interesting. He achieved most of it at 26, Cyril, because he really hasn't played the last 2 years. So if you look at it from a glass half full, it's pretty hard to at the moment as a Hawthorn fan. But if you look at it as a glass half full, Hawthorn's already had to adapt without him because he's barely played the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right.
The club has missed him, but I think they can move on. It's a lot easier in transition now, I think, not to mention the salary cap space.
Here we go.
With a bloke called Ty Vickery, who was also on the books this year. So there might be another $1 million in the war chest to throw around up.
Here's Mr. Hawthorn talking it up before the end of the year. They still have two quality mid to small forwards, don't they? Luke Bruce and Paul Puopolo are very good players.
Yep.
And so it's not the worst thing that can happen to Hawthorn. It's a sad thing for footy, though, because we won't see him anymore. And I think he was certainly one of the most watchable players in the game.
Oh, it's no doubt it's sad for footy. And has achieved, you know, four flags and Norm Smith, All-Australian, highlights reel that you could just, you know, just a couple of hours long if you want it to be. But I still feel that we've all been shortchanged a little bit at 28 retiring. And I know his decisions are his decisions, and they too, and there's a big lure to go back home, and that's understandable, and I respect that. And he barely came down this year because Burgoyne and Ruffhead had to go up there and lure him back because he just did not want to come home.
I reckon the Riolis do go early.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I think back on Morris, and as a South Fremantle fan, I watched Morris avidly, you know, from about 1977 through to the end. And and he really, his best footy was, you know, probably before about... probably before 86,
yeah.
I reckon. Towards 86, you just felt he was just hanging on.
So, when did he retire?
Good question. He came back and played for South Fremantle, so that
He did, because when I was writing for the Geelong Addy, we stayed at the Hyatt, and I just had a Saturday afternoon, so I wandered down to the Wacker, seeing that there's a game of footy on. It was South Fremantle playing, I think it was East Perth.
Yeah.
And I was just an unintentional. I just wandered down there, and there's Morris running around.
Yeah, no.
Glad I did that.
Played in the forward pocket, and was very handy. Just a senior player, wise head. Still had a bit of brilliance. Was heavier and didn't move around too much, but still had that that Rioli magic.
Just a bit of trivia too. Retires on 189 games. Another great Hawthorn great who played 189 games for the Hawks. Dee Brereton.
Yes, I thought you were going to say that.
Mm.
Okay, now, we watched the 18s yesterday, quarters,
mm-hmm.
Out of the corner of our eye as we were sitting in the office. And I know he's not Cyril, and you'll say he's not Cyril, but one South Australian boy that lit it up.
The man-child.
Isaac Rankin.
Isaac Rankin. I was watching the game with you in the area, and I said, who's this kid? He looks like he's 23. He just looks like his body has developed beyond the others. And, gee, looked like a special talent too. So he'd be going very early, if not the first pick.
Well, all the talk has been about Luke Kosius, hasn't it? And the King brothers from Victoria and Sam Walsh from Vic Country.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously if there's a West Australian boy in that mix, it's Ian Hill, who was suspended yesterday, so couldn't play. on what I've seen, Rankin would be my number one pick.
Yep, I think that's, well, from what I saw yesterday, he'd be mine too.
Kick five goals.
Just looked like he could make, and also looked like he could make the transition quickly to AFL for mine, for what I saw yesterday.
Yeah, fast and strong and powerful. Yeah. Like really, really powerful. And great finishing skills too. He kicked five goals against Vic Metro. If you get a chance to have a look at the game, footy fans, if you're a real diehard footy fan, go and have a look at it. That South Australian team is probably as good as any 18s team.
It was
a
sad day for the Big V. Very sad day for the Big V.
They got a frightful hammering, didn't they?
Good side, though, the South Australian side.
Obviously, Lukosius is in that mix as well. He's a tall
And I think you're right about Hill. He'll go early. I'm just not sure how early. He's very light.
Yeah, top 10, I think.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Not necessarily top 5.
Yep.
Which, you know, that could, depending on where our local clubs finish, that could bring them in the mix to get him, which would be exciting if he could stay here.
A bit of news too in the waffle with the Eagles, East Perth parting ways.
Yes.
Your thoughts?
It was just never an easy marriage, because it's not like Peel and Fremantle where it's not quite a takeover, but basically Peel doesn't have much a history to argue about and much leverage to bargain with. And basically, if Fremantle hadn't have gone to Peel were in dire trouble, whereas East Perth did it because they felt that their long-term financial future was questionable. And they have a proud history. And there was always arguments over what East Perth players were being dropped to allow West Coast players to play.
With the argument being the West Coast players weren't up to the standard of these East Perth players who were dropped.
Well, I think from time to time there were feelings that East Perth players that were playing well were ending up in seconds. And in fairness to West Coast,
from
their point of view, there was West Coast players who they wanted to play league footy who were running around in the twos as well. And I'll give you an example of that. Dylan Mayne ran around most of his time on West Coast list in the East Perth twos. Mm. Now, Dylan Mayne may never be an AFL player. He probably won't be now, but he's turned into a very, very good waffle player, having gone back to South Fremantle. So it was not an easy marriage. It didn't suit either party, really. The interesting thing for me is going to be whether West Coast will just stick to their guns and demand a standalone team, which is clearly what they want and clearly their preferred position, or whether the other clubs will get together and they'll say to both West Coast and Perth, because Perth aren't keen on an alignment.
No, they're not at all, no.
But whether the other clubs say, well, sorry, Perth, but, you know, you've almost been as bad as Peel. You haven't been successful. You haven't been financially successful. We think that given you're going to be sharing a ground, we think this is an ideal partner model situation.
There's another option too, which is still lingering in the background, and that is of an AFL reserves competition.
Yeah, well, the only way that happens is if a broadcaster pays for it.
Mm.
That is the only way.
Which is an option down the track. So that's lingering in the background still. So it could be that the Eagles have a standalone team in the competition, and it's not long term in the waffle competition. It does transform into an AFL comp, which would make it very interesting for Freo, of course, with their alliance with Peel.
So two interesting things I think that came out of our coverage today is one that West Coast say, if the other clubs want us to play all away games, we will. So basically every other club will have an extra home game because they will play West Coast at home. That's one thing. And the other thing is Fremantle said, we are happy with Peel. We want to continue with Peel. But if West Coast do this and our circumstances change to where we feel we're at a competitive disadvantage by not having our own standalone team, we will reserve the right to go the same way.
I think it'll end up down that track. I think it will end up down that path.
So that's going to be an interesting one. A, where does that leave Peel? And B, how will the rest of the competition feel about that?
Yep, very interesting. Watch this space over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. All right, Quarters, let's get on to tips for this weekend. And obviously we have Thursday night footy again.
Love it.
Starts off with Sydney v Geelong at the SCG. Give us your thoughts.
A couple of big outs for Sydney. 1-4 of the last 5 against the Cats, so they match up well. And a big in, I reckon, for Geelong in Scott Selwood.
That is a big in.
That's a huge in for them, given where they're at. Interestingly, last week, 129 possessions combined. Danger, Ablett, Joel Selwood, Kelly still couldn't get the job done.
Yeah.
So the being the worst clearance team in the competition, they've got to address that ruck deficiency, obviously, which will be done at the end of the year. I'm going to pick Sydney here. I'm still pretty hot on Sydney. And they have their issues, but I think they've addressed it at the SCG. I'm going to pick them. Four out of the last five. Geelong, almost a really good side.
I'm going to pick Sydney. What I'm interested to see is how much Scott Selwood stiffens Geelong's team defence, because he will play an accountable role in the midfield. He will either take out an opposition gun midfielder, or he will present a work ethic defensively which will drag teammates along with him, because that's the sort of player he is. I think he's a player, I absolutely agree with you, I think he's a player that is critical to Geelong's top four chances.
Yep, so, every day.
So Sydney to win, but very curious to see what sort of spike they get as a result of having Scott Selwood.
Yeah, and you would expect Hewitt to go to danger. And the interesting one is just Blissav's with Buddy Franklin seems the obvious choice, but he's under some doubt with a toe injury. So that could sway it in more in Sydney's favour as well if he doesn't come up.
Yep. Okay, so we're both on Sydney.
Friday, Richmond v Adelaide at the MCG. Now, a really big out for Richmond in Vlastune.
Vlastune?
Yeah, very, very big out, I think. I'm going to still stick with them. They are in, you know, ripping form. Still the best side in it, and everyone's scrambling to be the second best, in my opinion. Well, there's two or three sides scrambling to be. Getting the job done, not necessarily playing their best footy. We say it every week. Adelaide, you know, have hit some good form. Terrific last quarter last week, but it was effectively just a quarter and a bit, really, wasn't it? They weren't flash before then.
Yeah.
So still some question marks there. Let's hope Taylor Walker can hold some form, because if he can't, then there'll be no chance against Richmond. I'll be really, really interesting to see how Josh Jenkins and Taylor Walker go against the Tigers on the MCG.
So just not missing the chance to give the AFL another one about the grand final contract. We all talk about Richmond as the unquestionable flag favourites. Yep. We all talk about them as unquestionably the best team in the competition. Their road record is crap.
It is, and if it was an interstate side with that road record, we'd be isolating it and talking it up.
And that's why it shows that the AFL is completely and repeatedly sold out on competition, credibility and integrity for the sake of expediency. Sorry, boys, but the fact that we talk about Richmond like this, Richmond couldn't beat an egg on the road this year, and where they're still the absolute flag favourites, and everyone talks about them like they're superhuman. So there you go, got that off my chest. All right.
Not for the first time, Duff.
Yeah, so Richmond, we're both on the Tigers. Moving on to Brisbane v Carlton at the Gabba on Saturday.
Could be the battle for the wooden spoon. Well, probably will be, but I'm going to pick Brisbane here. Carlton have been terrific the last 2 weeks. No Harris Andrews again will hurt them in terms of probably the most informed player in the comp right now in Charlie Curnow. But a lot to like about Brisbane. We saw it firsthand last week against Freo, that terrific effort in the midfield. Beams leading the way, McGluggage, Berry, who'll probably get the job on Paddy Cripps. And down forward too, Hipwood, McStay looked pretty good last week. They looked pretty settled, Brisbane. Probably the best, what are they now, two and whatever it is, best two win at this stage team for a long, long time, I think, Brisbane. I think at home they should be able to get the job done against Carlton.
Yeah, there'll be two big tag dog jobs here. I don't think Berry will go to Cripps quarters. I think he'll go to Murphy. So I think
second game back, Murphy?
I think, assuming that Mark Murphy plays, I think they'll try and shut off his run, because Cripps plays inside, absolute monster. I know that Berry went to Fife last week, but Fife is clearly the dominant midfielder at Fremantle. I think they'll try and clamp down on Murphy's run. Nothing wrong with Brisbane last week against Fremantle. The only thing is 6 day break, very long plane flight back. So whether that affects them or not, I don't know. But certainly you'd want to be on them this week.
Yep.
Port Adelaide v St Kilda, Adelaide Oval, 2:35 Saturday.
Good luck, St Kilda. They've had a good solid 2 weeks.
They're going all right, the Saints.
They're going all right. I'm not getting carried away, though. Gresham's found some form. Billings has found some form. The right players have found some form. They're getting an inside 50 and they're getting the job done.
Armitage back is a big in for St Kilda.
Big
bodied midfielder. He takes the pressure off others. Others can play the roles they're more suited to. And I think he's been a massive in for them. But having said that, you would want to be on Port Adelaide.
Won the last six against the Saints.
Yeah.
So I'm saying it'll be seven.
And in the Charlie Curnow show last week, the thing that was a little bit lost is that Port Adelaide went to the MCG, needed to get a win, got a win, yeah. went home, banked the points, and they stay in the race for the top four. Well
important
done,
those wins at the G for the travelling teams, I think. Western Bulldogs v Hawthorn, two very different teams here. High handball, the Western Bulldogs, very high kicking team, Hawthorn, as always. Geez, they've been good the last couple of weeks, the Dogs.
Yeah.
Been really impressive. And with the Hawthorn hat on, very concerned about playing the Dogs at the moment. As I wouldn't have been a month ago, you would just about have ticked this one off. But it's going to be very close. It'll be a really hard-fought win. I've got enough faith in Hawthorn, whose form's pretty good. No shame in lowering their colours to GWS up at Spotless last week. I'm going to pick the Hawks, but with some trepidation.
I'm going to pick the Hawks. I thought seriously about picking the Dogs in this one. Two reasons. One, the Hawks tend to play better at the MCG than they do at Etihad Stadium. And two, you're right, the Western Bulldogs have been very good for the last 2 weeks. Having said that, I think Hawthorn, if Hawthorn were to drop this one, you have to think the top eight gets.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They need to. Hawthorn needs to win it too. I mean, Adams and Morris, they look better in defence. Certainly, yeah. The Dogs. The concern for them is in the ruck, where you've got McAvoy and now Seglar back for Hawthorn. And I just think Seglar is a really important player for Hawthorn. Not only to give McAvoy a bit of a chop out, but you can also go forward, take a couple of grabs contested wise, and he's not a bad player, Seglar.
Okay, so we're both on the Hawks.
We are.
Marginally. I don't think this one will be marginal. Melbourne v Fremantle in Darwin.
No, I mean, no Fife, no Sandy. You'd certainly expect Chera and Brayshaw and these types to get more time in the midfield up in Darwin. Melbourne, interesting matchup these. If I'm not wrong, I reckon they've lost their last 8 of 9, Melbourne. So the Dockers have got a bit of a wood on them. Going up to TIO Stadium. With Gawn, right now the best ruckman in the comp, I think Melbourne will win this reasonably comfortably.
I agree. The D's, though, they've got to show something, don't they? You know, we've all been banging on about their contested
not
ball.
Not in these games. I mean, no, with all due respect to Freo, yeah. I expect them to win this game. It's not in these games they have to show something. It's against the top four teams they have to show something.
You want to see a response immediately, though, because I thought the game against St Kilda was probably their most disappointing effort of the season.
Yeah, there have been a couple. The game against Hawthorn early was pretty bad too.
Yeah.
They got flogged. So there have been a couple of disappointing games by Melbourne. I still have faith.
You were bullish, you're just lish now.
I'm just lish now. There's always the bull there with me, but yeah, that's right.
Okay, so North, we're tipping Melbourne. Yep. North Melbourne v Gold Coast, Etihad Stadium on Sunday morning.
Yep. Again, Gold Coast is a team that has matched up well historically against North and does give them a run for their money. And I just think just slightly the edge is off North at the moment. You talk to North supporters, they're walking around saying, inevitably, this is it. It's come. The big tidal wave's here. We're going to run out of puff now. I'm not so sure. I think they've still got enough top-end form to carry them through these sorts of games. Ben Brown, obviously Higgins is one of the form players and possibly a Brownlow medalist.
Yeah.
And so I've got enough faith in North to win this one pretty easily at Etihad.
Yeah, I think this is a must-win for North. They can't play finals if they don't win.
It's really tight.
Games like
it's
this.
Really tight down that end, yeah, and that's why they'll win it, I think.
Yeah,
and cling on to that spot at the bottom end of the eight.
So North Melbourne in that one. This is a big one. Quarters, MCG Sunday, Essendon versus Collingwood. Two of the informed teams of the competition.
Yep.
Which way are you leaning? And don't just give me some Essendon hatred here. Come on.
No, Essendon hatred. In fact, I'll pump them up here. I'll pump them up. Can't lose. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to put them
the reverse
on.
Mock.
No, not the reverse mock. They've beaten North, GWS, Geelong and West Coast this year. So they've got some good sculpts, Essendon.
Yep.
Playing better football, playing more accountable football. The key here, Collingwood has not lost since round 9. I think Lyndon Dunn is a bigger loss than everyone I talk to doesn't think he'll be a big loss. I think it'd be a reasonable loss, Lyndon Dunn, to add with the loss of Treloar already, who's really going to impact them. I think that turns them from being a team that can definitely challenge Richmond on the last day in September, on the first day in October, to a team that's not quite there.
So maybe gets to a prelim.
Yeah, that's what I think is going to happen with Collingwood. I just still think this is a really – what's intriguing about this game is I want to see how Essendon goes against a real top four side, because when they have the game on their terms, as they had last week, it's all too easy and they look $1 million. But when the game's not in their terms, that's when the old Essendon comes back. So I need proof, and this game will give me proof. I'm going to pick Collingwood.
I half agree with you on Lyndon Dunn.
Yep.
I still think Treloar's the big loss. I think that when they bring Moore and Reid back, I think that will help to cover for the loss.
Reid's at least another month away now. He's had some more surgery on both knees.
Yeah.
Moore's starting back in the VFL this weekend, so he'll go back clearly, which was the intention early in the season anyway. So he'll go back.
You know what they'll miss? They'll miss Dunn's ball use.
Yeah, very good ball use. Yep.
So Moore will give him someone who can play on a tall forward, who can compete well in the air. Very agile, so he'll handle himself at ground.
One thing's
well.
For sure, if they win the midfield, which I expect them to, Collingwood, then they're in a bit of trouble, the Bombers, because you get that ball inside 50 at Collingwood, you're in a bit of strife. There's a lot of talent in there.
There is, yes. Yeah. Young talent, though. So
For them going forward.
Going to tip Collingwood. I wouldn't be surprised.
It's going to answer a lot of questions, particularly about Essendon.
West Coast v GWS
at Optus Stadium. A bit of trivia here. Well, not trivia, but a very, very interesting fact about this game that will surprise you, I'm sure. So West Coast has played GWS. This is the fifth time they've played GWS since they played North Melbourne. It's the quirk of the draw. Played North Melbourne round one last year. Played them five times. This will be the fifth game. So they've just played GWS a lot. So these teams have matched up a lot in the last 12 months or so.
That's amazing.
It's amazing stat. Check it out. It's fact.
I think I'm coping with
My man at Perth now, Chris Robinson, assures me.
I'm coping with that a lot easier than Cyril's retirement, I can tell you.
Yeah.
All right. So I think West Coast minus forwards can't beat GWS with their midfield up and going.
I think if that midfield gets control, then, yeah, I think you might be right. I think GWS is going to be very hard to beat. I'm going to go a bit of a venue tip here. I think this is a game West Coast can't afford to lose.
So you're tipping West Coast?
I am tipping them, but it's more of a... I have a little bit more faith in West Coast than I do in Freo for the Optus Stadium factor. I worry about them kicking goals. I really worry about where they're going to come from.
Short-term memory loss, their quarters? West Coast v Essendon two weeks ago? Yes, I know.
Are they going to play two shockers in a row at home? I find that very hard to believe.
I think those shockers come as a result of manpower. And I just look at West Coast now. I think West Coast can recover form before the end of the season, but it's hard to see how they recover form with no Kennedy, no Darling, and no Lacrosse.
So, yeah, we're talking about Shield, Ward, Kelly, Coniglio, and more importantly, we're talking about Whitfield. Now, Kit has asked the question this week, who do they tag? And your theory is that they tag Whitfield.
Yeah, coming off halfback.
Geez, who do you tag? It's tough, isn't it? There's a lot in that side. There's two or three. Whitfield, definitely, that runoff halfback. Coniglio and Kelly are worth looking at too. And then
I would throw, the other thing I would do, I would throw Yo to Kelly,
yep.
Not purely defensive, but accountable, where Yo tries to work him both ways, sort of like work with him defensively and then try and head the
other way. What do they do in attack the Eagles? Now, there's all these theories floating around, and you know mine about McGovern. If your forward line's decimated, I don't like you decimating the defence as well, which is, I think, was where McGovern should stay. There's talk they should throw Nick Nat into the forward line.
Well, Nick Nat doesn't get enough of the ball.
Well, I agree. I don't think that's the answer either. So, where they kick goals is a real quandary for the Eagles at the moment. Hopefully it's not too far away and they get either Kennedy.
And, of course, the other one that probably won't play, well, he won't play this week, is Liam Ryan.
Yeah, so Liam, there's four starting forwards out, Lacroix as well. So there's trouble down there. But if you get it down there often enough, strange things happen, Duff.
Yeah, I would...
If
I was them, I would be playing McGovern back. I'd be trying to capitalise on the fact that GWS's forward line is weakened too.
Yes, without Jeremy Cameron.
And without Toby Green. I'd try and turn it into a 12-goal to 10-goal game and see if you can win it. Now, what do you do up the other end if McGovern doesn't go forward? I'd be inclined to play Brander. I just think you know, a kid in front of a big crowd. I thought it was a really tough assignment to give Brander his debut at the SCG against the Swans. I would play him. He's a smart player. He will find space if their ball use going inside 50 is good. And if he can kick you two or three, you know, just take chances. He's done his job. Leave most of the rest of it as similar to what it can be as it possibly can.
Because it's worked.
And, you know, certainly keep your defence pretty solid and see if you can limit their scoring.
Well, they'll have looked at, clearly Adam Simpson and the boys will have looked at the contested possessions and the clearances last week. They just smashed Hawthorn and should have won by more.
Yeah.
And so if they can address that and sort of just scale it back a bit, I think there are every chance the Eagles.
And it was interesting that the way that the Hawks got them and kept themselves in the game was slingshot footy.
Yep.
So that means strong defence and see if you can catch them when they turn the ball over heading inside their attack. And they do, this frustrates the hell out of me with GWS, they do still take liberties with the ball.
Yep.
You know, they flirt with ability instead of exploiting ability. And I think if they do that on Sunday, they can let West Coast into this game. But having said that, I'm tipping GWS.
Yep.
You're going with the home team?
I am going with the home team.
Brave tip, Quarters.
I'm a brave man.
You are. I think you're back level with me now. I think I've caught you.
I am. So this will sort the men out from the boys this week. I think it's the only tip we've got different this week.
Yes, it is.
So there you go, mate. One of us will go ahead.
Yes.
Unless it's a draw.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning for Tab Touch. We'll be back on Tuesday with the wrap-up of the round and all the implications of the results. Quarters, thanks for being here. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Look forward to it, mate.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.